is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now the pro-life news.
This from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, a measure meant to put additional regulations on the state's abortion clinics, was vastly changed in a Senate committee Wednesday, leaving just a few smaller concerns. Senate Bill 292 originally would have made some major changes to abortion law, but an amendment was offered immediately by the committee chairwoman to remove most of the legislation. After amendment, the bill passed the committee and now heads to the full Senate for consideration. The bill originally would have eliminated a grandfathering provision and required all abortion clinics to meet certain physical plant standards. The amendment removed that language. The original bill also would have required annual inspections of the clinic instead of biennial. The legislation now says the Indiana State Department of Health may inspect once a year and when complaints are filed. Lastly, the measure touches slightly on current law requiring an abortion doctor to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital or an alternate backup physician with admitting privileges. The bill would have eliminated the backup physician option, but was kept to reflect current law. It does now require more information to be provided about the backup to the state. Okay, Kathy, normally when we hear about bills, you know, people making changes in committee, we get nervous, but there are some good results here.
Exactly. The intention of the amendments was to make certain that this bill was clean. And by that, I mean those who have been following pro-life issues in the state probably are aware that there have been many consumer complaints filed against the abortionist that operates in Allen, Lake, and St. Joe counties, Dr. Ulrich Klopfer, who is
actually reporting on a regular basis.
Right, who's actually an itinerant who lives out of state. The only county where we could confirm that the abortionist had a backup physician relationship with a physician in the area in which he performs abortions is in the Allen County. And the reason for that is because of our county ordinance in Allen County, which requires the name of that doctor to be filed with the local health department. There's similar regulations in place at the state level. However, there was no requirement that that information be filed with any governmental authority or agency.
So you can just say, yes, I have admitting privileges. And
well, you didn't have to say anything. There was just a law in the books saying you had to do it. But there was no action required on part of the abortionist to file with anyone saying who that backup doctor was. So the bill, as it now stands, would just require the abortionist to tell the Indiana Department of Health who his backup physician is. And of course, then that would be public record. And we could make certain that the laws are being kept. So that's what this is all about. That's why the extra language was stripped out, was because we wanted this to be a clean bill addressing the issue of the backup physician. So the last date that bills can cross over from one chamber to the other is February 4th, and we anticipate action being taken soon.
Oh, great. And, you know, it sounds like this also empowers more as far as inspections, whereas before, was it the previous law, you could only inspect once every other year or something like that?
Well, I think that was in the Indiana Department of Health regulations that it had to be at least every other year. But on further investigation, we found that they are free to inspect more frequently than that. So that made that piece of this legislation unnecessary.
Okay, I understand now. Mm-hmm. And now turning our attention to national news, this from the New York Times, the House of Representatives voted on Tuesday to impose tighter restrictions on federal payments for abortions, thrusting the issue of a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy into the polarizing politics of an election year. The bill stands no chance of being passed by the Democratic-controlled Senate, but that mattered little to members of both parties who seemed to relish the chance to accuse their opponents of blatantly twisting the issue to their political advantage. The House vote was 227 to 188, mainly along party lines. Six Democrats voted yes, one Republican voted no, and another voted present. Democrat Representative Barbara Lee of California described the legislative fight as, quote, another battle in the war on women. Now, Kathy, we've heard that war on women moniker before, but that's interesting to follow that up with this other story out of California from Operation Rescue. It says Operation Rescue has obtained a 911 recording of a medical emergency at Family Planning Associates Abortion Clinic in Downey, California, that indicated an abortion patient had suffered massive hemorrhaging. The incident took place 2 days before Christmas. Later in the article, it says an eyewitness to the incident, Rob Saunders, described the scene to Operation Rescue, saying, quote, the fire truck was in the street blocking a lane of traffic while the ambulance was at the rear of the building. Close quote. Saunders indicated that this is the second such medical emergency he has witnessed at the Downey FPA, which is located next door to Downey High School. Nurse practitioner Heesuk Kum is listed as working at the Downey Abortion Clinic. In California, nurse practitioners are allowed under a new law passed last year to do abortions without supervision from a licensed physician. Now, it's ironic that people who want to support these types of shoddy practices would accuse the other side of conducting a war on women.
Exactly, Scott. Excellent observation there. Just a couple of comments on the federal legislation. First, as you mentioned in your quote from the New York Times, this bill stands no chance of being passed by the Democratic-controlled Senate. Elections have consequences, and I would just remind our listeners to put that in the back of their minds as they look at this election cycle coming up. Make certain you understand where the candidates that you have an opportunity to vote for stand on this issue.
Yes.
And vote accordingly and hold them accountable. Also, I would point out that this law would just put into the federal regulations the Hyde Amendment, which has to be renewed every year. So this would eliminate that annual fight over the restrictions that are already in the Hyde Amendment. So it's really not new territory. It's just eliminating this from the annual fight that has to take place over the Hyde Amendment.
That's one of the reasons why the other side says, well, this type of legislation isn't necessary because of the Hyde Amendment.
Right. And I would also point out to our listeners that in regard to the massive hemorrhaging from the abortion patient that you read the account of a short while ago, legislation was passed in our last session, legislative session here in Indiana in 2013, that would require any abortion facility that dispenses the medical abortion drugs would have to be licensed as any other abortion facility that does surgical abortions. And that is currently being litigated because the other side claims that medical abortions are safe and there's really no need to have them licensed as an abortion facility in the state of Indiana. So we could give you many accounts of situations where women have suffered greatly as a result of medical abortions. Some in the medical field even consider these to be more harmful to women and expose them to more danger than a surgical abortion, because they may have to come back if the drugs don't work as they're supposed to. They may have to come back for a surgical abortion and, you know, in effect go through two procedures. So again, it is ironic that the representative in the U.S. Congress was from California, and that's exactly where this this situation occurred. So war on women? I don't think so.
Well, as we mentioned, not only does this have no chance of passing the Senate, but according to LifeSite News, and this should come as no surprise, President Barack Obama has already threatened to veto this bill if it gets to his desk, even if it should get through the Senate. By the way, this is called the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. And I want to read from this LifeSite story because there are several, I guess you could say, ironic quotes from Barack Obama as to his reasoning. He said, quote, the legislation would intrude on women's reproductive freedom and access to health care, close quote. And elsewhere it said, he said, it would, quote, increase the financial burden on many Americans, close quote. Now, that's a very ironic quote, considering the financial burden that his signature legislation has placed on many Americans.
No doubt. I think the president has seized on this as another opportunity to speak to his base, which is rabidly pro-abortion. As we've already discussed, this has virtually no chance of passing the Senate, which is controlled by pro-abortion advocates. So I think this is merely an opportunity again for him to speak to his base.
Yes. Well, elsewhere, he said that the bill would, quote, unnecessarily restrict the private insurance choices that consumers have today, close quote. Again, he's demanding public funds for these supposedly private choices. That's a contradiction in terms.
Well, there's a piece of legislation that's moving through the Indiana General Assembly this session that would make certain that abortions are not covered on any kind of insurance that would be as a result of Obamacare. So we're looking for that to pass without any problem here in the state of Indiana. So Nancy Pelosi, minority leader in the House in Washington, has said you have to pass the bill in order to see what's in it. I think we're going to see, as this unfolds, more and more places where we need to be cautious of what is being rolled out. And we have folks who are being vigilant, and we'll certainly keep our listeners informed if there's any action they need to take. But know that your Indiana legislators are, in fact, addressing this as far as the rollout of Obamacare in the state of Indiana.
Well, something else that Obama said that, again, is a little bit ironic, I suppose. He said that this legislation is unnecessary, and he cited the executive order he signed, which gained support for the Affordable Care.
Democrat pro-life.
Bart Stupak from Michigan and people like that.
And they paid a dear price for that.
They did. And again, we've seen since that what's happened with the HHS mandate, which even Stupak says now, you know, this contradicts his executive order.
Exactly. And I would also just point out again that this is nothing new. These regulations are already in the Hyde Amendment. The only thing it does is change the timing of the argument.
Okay, and the attempts to pass this bill come at a time when we're seeing even more and more support for, at the very least, restrictions on abortion. This is another story from LifeSite News. The new Marist poll sponsored by the Knights of Columbus reveals more than ever that an overwhelming majority of Americans are not satisfied with the current status quo on abortion. A staggering 84% believe abortion should be restricted. Now, later in the story, it says only 9% believe that abortion should be available to a woman anytime she wants one during her entire pregnancy, the survey found. Okay, Kathy, some of those people may believe abortion should be legal in some circumstances, but most of them do believe you should be able to place restrictions on abortion.
This is obviously a huge erosion of support for unfettered, unrestricted abortion. Also, I have not unpacked the poll data, but I bet when we do, we'll find that when you look at the demographics, a growing number of those who are in their teens and 20s and 30s even are more pro-life than they've ever been. We saw this again at the D.C. March for Life when literally hundreds of thousands of folks gathered in bitterly cold weather this year to show their support for the unborn and their mothers in crisis.
And you'll hear about that later in today's program as we talk about people from Indiana who went and presented a petition to Senator Joe Donnelly on that regard.
Exactly. So we are very encouraged by the numbers that show a growing support for restrictions, at least on abortion. And we think that as technology advances and the younger face comes to the movement, we'll finally see an end of this Holocaust here in the United States.
55 students, about 20 chaperones, and a large caravan left Fort Wayne on January 20th and drove all the way to Washington, D.C. to participate in the 40th annual March for Life and to urge a senator from Indiana to stand for life. I'm Amanda Banks, and today I'm pleased to have with me in the studio one of the student leaders who went on this trip. She is Grace Lagerman, and some of you have heard from her before. Grace, thanks for coming back in to tell us about your trip today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I am just, as we were talking before we got started, just encouraged and even entertained by some of these stories about your trip to D.C. So I'm glad we can share them today, as well as just what you learned, what you took away from that, and some of the things, important things that you were involved with during your few days out in our nation's capital. But for those listeners who might not have heard you last time, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how old you are, where you go to school, what your interests are, that sort of thing.
Well, I am 16 years old. I am in 11th grade at Concordia Lutheran High School. I am heavily involved in our drama department, and I'm also involved as a leader in our Right to Life group.
Okay. So the Right to Life group at Concordia, tell me about how many students are in your high school, and then how large is that group?
Well, our students, I think we have over 700 students at Concordia, and the group is about I want to say a little over 15 students.
Okay, great. So is this something you've been involved with all through high school or something new for you?
No, actually, we didn't have a group last year. So
oh, wow.
This is our first year having a group, and I hope that we can just grow from here.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I didn't know that it was so new.
Yeah.
That's very encouraging. So Grace, when did you first get involved in pro-life work?
I really first got involved about 2 years ago. I was asked to sing the national anthem for the Allen County March for Life. And from there, I did sing a couple more times for the Allen County Right to Life group. And after doing that a couple times, I just really got interested and from there got more involved.
Yeah. Do you have plans to carry on, you know, your pro-life values into college, into your profession? Do you see this being a lifelong value that you're going to take with you?
Yeah, I'm going to fight for the pro-life cause for as long as abortion is still legal. I pray that before I die, I get to see a day where everybody gets a chance at life. And I definitely plan on working hard throughout college and even through my profession, no matter what I do, that my voice is heard and that I can help others let their voices be heard as well.
That's great. Now, you told me before you had gone on this trip to DC last year.
Yes.
So this was your second year going. Were there more students from your high school that came this year?
There were. Last year, there wasn't as much of a push because there wasn't a group and a lot of kids didn't even know what the walk was.
Okay.
So this year being the second year, we had a lot of students going. We had more kids to really encourage others to go. So we did have more students, I think about 10 to 15 more students from Concordia go this year than last year.
Well, wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, seeing that growth has got to be encouraging, especially for you as a leader of the group.
Yes.
So for someone who has maybe heard of the March for Life, but certainly never been, how would you describe what's it like to just be there among so many people marching for unborn life?
It's so powerful and so encouraging, especially for people my age when, you know, we don't have a lot of people standing next to us and sharing our same beliefs. So, you know, sometimes it can be discouraging in Fort Wayne, even at my school, when I have people telling me that they don't believe the same thing and that I shouldn't be fighting for what I believe in. To get to go to the Capitol where the big decisions are made and stand with so many other people, it was great.
I had read reports that there were hundreds of thousands that marched. And that just that number is hard for me to envision. You know, what did that actually look like? Do you get a sense when you're there that there are, in fact, that many thousands of people? Or do you look around and not, are you not able to see ahead of, you know, the shoulders in front of you?
Yeah,
what's that like?
It was hard to comprehend. I'm a very short person. So being in the middle of everybody, I couldn't see like where the line started or where the line ended. But I mean, it was everywhere. When we first got there, about an hour before the march started, there were people everywhere. There were groups of people getting excited. I don't know, it was so many people, and I couldn't even comprehend the number of people. So hearing after I left that there were over 700,000 was crazy because I had no idea.
Right.
So
that is indeed a large number of people.
Yes.
And to think that this has happened for 40 years now, and you were there on the 40th anniversary to march with those hundreds of thousands of others. I have personally never been to the march, and I regret that. I think it would be a wonderful experience. So if you're just joining us, I'm Amanda Banks, and I'm speaking to Grace Lagerman about her trip, along with about 55 other students and many chaperones who left Fort Wayne on January 20th to go to the March for Life in Washington, D.C. Grace, I know the weather was a little inclement when you guys went, and then you got there and it affected some things. Talk about that. What was one of the good things that came out of this bad weather that you incurred?
Being from Indiana, the weather didn't seem that bad to me, but D.C., they took it a little differently. We were stuck in the church that hosted us for, it felt like a number of days, but it was about 5 hours, and you know, looking back, it was probably a good thing for our group because there were so many people in the group that I didn't know. It wasn't just students from Concordia. It was students from all over Allen County, and it gave us all a chance to really get to know each other, which made it so much better to work with each other the next day, getting to walk. And it really just got us all focused, I think, on what we were doing and why we were there.
Yeah, some fellowship that you wouldn't have had otherwise, it sounds like. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also had the opportunity to go on a tour of the Capitol,
yes.
as I understand. And who hosted your tour?
Marlon Stutzman okay. and his family.
Oh, that's great. So yes. our very own congressman was there yes. to give you that tour. And then talk about a little bit about going on the floor. Did he take you to the Senate floor, you said?
He did.
Okay.
It was really neat to be there, especially for me because I love politics.
Yeah.
So just getting to be in the middle of it and knowing how many decisions that impact our lives so greatly, they're made right there. And we got to experience that, especially, you know, being told about it by a congressman. You know, it was just neat.
What a neat experience. Not one that many people get, especially a personal tour by a congressman. So I'm glad you guys got to do that.
Yes.
I know a lot of things were closed, right? Because of the weather, museums and things.
Yeah. The first day we got there, that's really why we were stuck at the church because we had nowhere to go. All the museums were shut down. And
what a shame. But something else good came out of it. Where did you get to go for dinner?
Well, the congressman was kind enough to invite our entire group of about 75 people over to his house over afterwards for dinner.
Wow.
Yes.
Again, something that doesn't happen to most people. So that's great.
Yeah.
I bet that was a lot of fun.
It was. I really enjoyed it. And I was just, you know, so thankful that the congressman was so generous to all of us.
Yeah, I am too. That was so nice of he and his family.
Mm-hmm.
Let's switch now to senators. One of the reasons that you all went out to D.C. was to deliver some very important petitions, and
yes.
our listeners should be familiar with this. Of course, our Senator Dan Coats is a co-sponsor of a very important piece of legislation called the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. And we've explained in past broadcasts that this legislation would prohibit abortions after 20 weeks gestation across the nation, affecting a very large portion of abortions and therefore of unborn children who are unfortunately at this time killed at the hands of abortionists.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, our other senator, Joe Donnelly, has not supported this legislation yet. He has not signed on as a co-sponsor. And so mm-hmm. you and the other students took over 1,600
yes.
petitions, I believe, out to Washington, D.C. to hand deliver to his office. And just tell us, Grace, what was your hope in doing that? And also, how did that all turn out?
Well, we didn't actually get to take them to his office, but the whole idea behind it was just to let him know how we want to be represented, you know, mm-hmm. since he is representing us. And he has said he was pro-life, and we just kind of want to hold him to his word, and we want to let him know how important it is to us as Hoosiers that he takes a stand.
Very good. So although you didn't personally get a chance to deliver him to the office, I know Kathy Humbarger did.
Yes.
And the petitions are there in Senator Donnelly's office now, and his staff has received those. And we look forward to hearing his response. Certainly, that's no small thing that 1,600 people from his home state took the time to sign on and say that they wanted him to co-sponsor this legislation and urge his Senate leadership to allow a vote. Because as our listeners may remember, a vote was taken in the House of Representatives in June, mm-hmm. and it passed without problem. So we're now awaiting action in the Senate. I'm very glad that you guys took it seriously to collect those signatures and to get those out to D.C. Mm-hmm. and into the senator's office. And we do, again, look forward to his response. So, Grace, as you think back to just this whole experience, the ups and downs, the closings and the delays and whatnot, what did you really take away from your trip to D.C. this year?
Well, it was just such a great experience for me, especially because, like I said, you know, there are so many people that are telling us, you know, why are you pro-life? You know, you shouldn't mm-hmm. be doing this. You know, it doesn't really matter. So it was so encouraging to be there. It was fantastic to be standing next to so many other people that clearly care a lot since they're traveling from, you know, who knows how far. It just really gave an urgency, you know, to see so many people from across the country that cared. You know, it gave me an urgency, and I hope everybody else that was there, an urgency to let us know that we need to get as much done as soon as possible because every single day lives are being lost. Mm-hmm. And we just all need to pull together and work together like we do once a year. We need to do it every day and change as much as possible.
Oh, that's well said. So as you think about your pro-life group at Concordia
yes.
and maybe some of the other pro-life groups from the schools that were represented who went with you, do you guys have any plans in the future, any upcoming projects or initiatives that you want to get underway as a result of this?
Well, we hope to grow. There's not a lot of people in Concordia's group, mm-hmm. as well as I'm assuming a lot of other groups. We just want to get more people out there, get more people involved and really let our voices be heard.
Awesome. Well, I think you're going to do it. You have passion, clearly, and you have motivation, especially coming off of this trip and seeing what you did, being part of what you were part of at the 40th annual March for Life. Are you encouraged, Grace, by, you know, seeing other people of your age that are involved in the pro-life movement? Do you often feel like you're part of a large group of people, or does it seem more like you're, you know, one of the few? How do you feel about just your generation in general?
Well, you know, being my age, 16 years old, there's a lot of people that say that this could affect a lot of girls my age. Mm-hmm. And so there are so many people my age, you know, that aren't pro-life, but there's also a lot that really just don't care at all. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of the times feel like I'm standing alone or standing with a very few, you mm-hmm. know, standing with a number of people that just isn't enough to make a difference. So I was very encouraged to see so many people my age, even people from my school that I didn't expect to go, that it was just kind of a pleasant surprise thinking, because last year there were maybe 10 people from Concordia, and this year seeing over 25 people and have people come that just surprised me. Mm-hmm. It was nice to know that more people care than I think.
Right. Well, that's very encouraging. It seems like really everything about the trip was encouraging.
It was, yes.
Despite the hiccups in the road and not having the best weather, but that didn't stop you. That didn't stop your classmates and the other hundreds of thousands of people who joined you. So thank you for going and just taking time out of your schedule, not only to go on the trip, but to talk to us before and after about your experience. And if anyone else is interested in perhaps going next year or starting a group at a different high school in Fort Wayne or across Indiana where you're hearing this broadcast, I encourage you to contact either Allen County Right to Life if you are here in Fort Wayne, or Indiana Right to Life if you're outside of our city. Certainly there are other groups that do the same thing, and we would love to grow those numbers as Grace has been talking about. Thanks again for joining us. You've been listening to Grace Lagerman, and I'm Amanda Banks.
If you or someone you know is in a crisis pregnancy, help is just a phone call away. Call 877-791-5475. If you or someone you know is dealing with grief and pain after an abortion decision, whether you had an abortion, convinced someone else to have an abortion, or even participated in a procedure, call 877-791-5475. You'll be referred to a crisis pregnancy center in your area, a place where free and confidential services are available. That's 877-791-5475. 877-791-5475.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program, or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to iChooseLife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.